First of all, it's just good to be here, and it's good to, to think back and remember, because I was actually trying to remember the name of that pastor, the first one that came on last night. It was
Dale Thatcher.
Dale Thatcher, that's right. So, yeah, and those are many days back now when I think about it. And, that's when we were first going as a family. I've spent most of my summers there since 1979, so that's 46 years ago now today that I started spending summers there. When I met Brenda, then we went 4 summers together before we went full-time as a family, and so that's how we got involved in this church right about that time, like Pastor was saying. And so you've been faithful ever since. You've been faithful to the task, and it's kind of like it was a handoff, you know. Pastor just received a handoff of these missionaries and didn't know us from Adam, and yet very faithful. And I just, as I stand before you, I'm very conscious of that. So what I'm going to do is, this morning, I think the best thing to do, especially because the kids are here, I'm going to be talking to the kids a little bit. So if I go above your level, that's just, you adults, that's just because I'm talking to kids. And I'm trying to, you know, just include them, because usually I have this potter's wheel, and I like to put some clay on it, like to turn that clay, and so that, to make a pot and everything, and so the kids are really watching that, and so I have their attention. And then we talk about how God uses us, like the potter uses the clay and creates each of us. I don't have that this morning, so when I realized the kids were coming up, I decided to have some pictures, because I had to sit in Sunday school. No, I got the privilege of sitting in Sunday school all of my life since I was born. And so we did a lot of services back then. We did Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, and we had maybe a Bible study in between there. And then an evangelist would come to town, and he'd spend a week. Well, every night during that week, we get to go to church. And honestly, I didn't remember everything that these people were saying, because they were talking kind of, that I know they're talking about Jesus. So that was the answer to everything was Jesus. But I didn't remember a lot of things until they used an image. And when they used an image, then it stuck in my mind. And so we're going to talk, I'll talk to you kids a little bit this morning, to tell you what we do in this country called France, which is a long way away from here. And you've probably heard some things about France, but I'm going to talk to you a little bit this morning about what we've seen over there. I'll go back to why I enjoy being here. We always like to come. The pastor was talking, was thanks for coming, thanking us for coming, you know, off the main path. You are in the middle of nowhere. I know, because I'm from Wyoming, which is just a little further that way, and that's really nowhere. So this is almost nowhere, and so it takes some getting to get here. But it's one of those churches that we really, really feel like family here. You've made us feel like family from the very beginning, and it's one of those things that I want this morning to do, is to share with you what you are a part of. Because as a family, you are a part of everything that happens in the country of France and every other missionary that you support. And how you've been family to us? Well, I'll see if this works right here. For a long time, we've known these people. They aren't the only ones. We've had meals at their house oftentimes. And other meals, you know, we've eaten with Pastor and Kelly, and we've eaten with some people that aren't here anymore. Lots of meals and lots of fun times that we spent with these people. Lots of robust board games. You like playing board games? Robust, I say, because some people don't like to lose. And that's all I'll say about that. You've taken care of us. You've taken care of us, and you've been taking care of my kids. You've really took them in as a family, and they felt like they're part of this. When we tell them we're going to South Dakota, they remember, oh, yeah, I remember, and they have their own stories, rolling around on the floors, and you've just been tender with our kids and got down on their level and just really appreciated our family. It's been a real blessing for us. And if you know Amanda, so in that first picture, there's Amanda. You know her because you know Sherry and the Coleman family. Well, she's in here somewhere. No, I know him. And if you can, you pick Amanda out in here. Mom and Dad can. I'll show you a little closer. She's the one that looks the most annoyed in this picture. So this is the camera here. Let's go the other way. So here she is. So that's some kid's doing something behind her. I don't know what that kid's doing. But anyway, she's a little annoyed. So she became a teacher, and so she knows how to look annoyed. Anyway, she came to our camp and spent a summer there. We were with them last night, and we were able to talk about all the fun times we were able to have there, but also the meaningful times she came and shared and worked with these French kids that you see around her as they were, we were starting our early camps. And so it's been a lot of fun just to be a part of this family. And even my daughter, she went to Liberty for a while, so she stayed with Alyssa for a few weeks because there was no housing out there. And so the connection that we have with this church has been a lot of fun, but it's also been very meaningful to us. And we've always felt welcome here. So thank you. Thank you for being our family. And I want to just move into kind of a little bit about France and how we got over there. So like I said, kids, I grew up in the church just like you. I'm sitting there listening to somebody talk and thinking, what's this guy all about? You're checking him out, you know, and you're looking at it. But one thing that I heard from a lot of the missionaries that came through was this verse. And I grew up with this verse. It's in Matthew 28:16-20. And it says, Jesus says, all authorities. This is Jesus when he before he left his disciples to go back heaven. After he died on the cross, he came back and he talked to them and he said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So I'm telling you, go and make disciples of all nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything that I have commanded you. This is what we call the Great Commission. It's where Jesus stands before us and says, I've come, I'm God's Son, I've sent from God, and I came and I died for your sins, and now I'm telling you, you've seen me for the last 3 years now. I've died for your sins so that you can go to heaven and be with God. Now I want you to go out into that world, and I want you to go tell people that. And I grew up with this verse all of my life. It's called the Great Commission, and where God, Jesus, calls us out to go testify to him. But I have to tell you, this wasn't my motivation for going and being a missionary. You think, well, that's where he got it. He's going to be a missionary. He's going to go out and tell people. No, I didn't get it from this verse. I got it because I didn't want to get stuck in my little hometown over there in Riverton, Wyoming. That was my call to missions. It was fear. God said, I knew these verses from young, like you youngsters. I've heard these verses forever. But that wasn't my major motivation. It's just that I didn't want to get stuck where I was. And so that's the reason I went to missions the first time. But when I got over there to where you saw Amanda with those kids a little while ago, I realized what God was doing over there, and that really changed my life. And that was it became my motivation, was telling others about this Jesus that came to die for our sins. And so when I was back then, I was making plans to leave my little hometown in Riverton. I wanted to leave there because I just didn't want to get stuck in what I saw everybody else doing. My high school friends, they weren't doing the right things, and they were kind of not taking a good path. And so I thought, if I stay here, I'm going to just do what everybody else is doing and get stuck here. And I didn't want that to happen. And so I said, well, I think I'm going to go to Europe and backpack and hitchhike around. So it used to be, I don't know if you've seen them, they don't do that much anymore. People used to stand on the side of the road and they would do this. Maybe you've seen some. Has anybody, you kids seen hitchhikers? Have you ever heard of a hitchhiker? One or two. Probably shouldn't do it anymore, but you used to go out and you used to stick your thumb out like this on the side of the road, and cars would go by, and then somebody would say, oh, there's a person, you know, that needs a ride somewhere. This means I need a ride when you're standing on the side of the road. And I thought I'd go to Europe and I'll hitchhike around and see what's happening over there. Well, an old camp counselor came up to me one time, and he was traveling around. He happened to be where I was living in Riverton. And he just stopped by to be in the church, and he says, what are you doing? I says, well, I'm trying to get out of here. And I said, I think I'm going to Europe, and I'm going to give a backpack and hitchhike around. And he said, well, there's some worthy things, some more significant things you can do. And so he gave me a lot of information, and he gave me some information about this camp, and I filled out an application, and they took me. So that's how I got to France the first time, was I was trying to run and not get stuck in my hometown. But like I said, God changed my heart there. And early on, he gave me this verse that I thought was very meaningful. So he gave me this verse that said, I'll show you where we're at, first of all. This is one here. We're at a place, this little parenthesis here now. This doesn't say Camp of the Peaks. This says, and it doesn't say Camp de Kimes, Des Kimes either. It says Con, or it says Con. De Cime. So when people come to my camp, what I tell them, I say, here, this is the easiest way to do it, because they say they put it all together. It says condesim. So I say, just think about an ex-con or a convict, a con. So con, and then you say con, and then you say day, like today. And then you say seam, like the seam in your clothes. Here's a seam in my shirt right here. So seam. If you say condesim, it's pretty close. And so that's what it means, is camp of the peaks. And so when I got on the plane the first time and I went to France, I went to a place called Condesim, and it's just to the left down below. You can see it's in the dark right there. That's where we went for the first time. And the Lord gave me this verse. He said, how beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring tidings of good joy, or who bring good tidings and joy, who proclaim salvation. This is Isaiah 52:7. And he says, how beautiful are the feet on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news. Now, look at your shoes this morning. Look at your shoes. I got what I would call church shoes on this morning. Excuse me for this. But here, these are church shoes for me. Like me and Gene, we have the same church shoes here. So these are church shoes. And here we got church shoes. That was some there. Anybody got church shoes on? There's some. Kind of church shoes, tennis shoes. These are kind of, they're hiking boots, kind of becoming church shoes now. When I was a kid, I had to put on some church shoes, and they had to go to church. And so that's what I thought this verse was talking about. What is mountains? When I was a kid, I didn't understand it. But when I got here, I understood. And so all I ever wore, I left my church shoes back here, and I wore shoes that looked just like these shoes right here, mountain shoes. It's snowing a little bit outside, so we can do something different this morning, have different kind of church shoes. So my church shoes became hiking boots, because we would walk around those mountains and talk to kids about Jesus. They would come to our camp, and it's not just kids, it was also adults. And so I never put church shoes on, but I was spreading the gospel by telling in these boots that I had that were my hiking boots. And so that meant a lot to me, because it was telling me, Tom, I have a place for you that fits with you and your personality and who you are. I don't want you to be like anybody else. I made you unique, one of a kind. And you know what? Every one of us has a purpose. We're all a unique, one-of-a-kind individual. And so it doesn't matter what kind of shoes you have on. It depends on where you're at is what kind of shoes you're wearing. But wherever you're at, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, you're supposed to tell others about him. And so that's what it took for me, was to be in these mountains. And so what is the camp? What is the Condesim? The Condesim is, we call it a haven, or you can call it also a refuge. A refuge is a place in the mountains where you're hiking in the mountains and you have these little cabins. I don't know if they have much here. And they're all kind of equipped with warm stuff, and sometimes they have some food in them. You can go into them and you can stay there, especially if you're in trouble, if you're getting cold and stuff. And they have these refuges, and a refuge is a place where you can just go and take refuge and be saved. Well, the Condesim is a refuge or a haven in France for God to save the lost and strengthen the found. And so I really like this, because that's what God's done. The way I like to explain it is this. This next slide will show you. So I don't have a pointer here, but you see some buildings down there, kind of the tops of buildings that are down here on this side. That's the camp. Most of those buildings are the camp's buildings. And so I like to explain it like this. God took a map of the world, and he put his finger down on the map of the world, this little bitty French alpine village, and he said, I think I'm going to go and I'm going to meet people there. And he has. So it's almost 60 years now that the camp has been in existence. He put his finger down and said, I'm going to go meet people there. And he came and he met me there. And he meets people there. And that's a really neat thing to me, because it takes me out of it. He just put me there to serve him. But I don't do anything there. I just keep the buildings going, and I get programs for the youth and the families to come in. But he's the one, and he comes and he meets people there. That's the neat thing about the Condesim, and that's why I like being there. And if you're in church very long, you hear this verse. Maybe you already have. 2 Timothy 2:1 through 4 says, "You then, my son, be strong in grace, in the grace that Jesus Christ has given to you. And the things that you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust them to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." What does that mean? He says, Tom, to me it meant, Tom, you've been sitting in church all your life. You've learned all these things that I wanted to teach you. And now I want you to take that, and I want you to take that to others, and I want you to tell others about that. And they can in turn then tell others. So it's passing things along. So that's what we're doing at Camp There. We're trying to pass things along, what Jesus Christ has done for us. Now, I'm a foreigner in France. So when I went to France, I had to talk French. J'étais obligé de commencer de parler comme ça. Au début, j'ai rien compris. Donc finalement, j'ai dû apprendre la langue pour que je puisse parler avec les gens qui habitent là. Exactly. When I got there, that's exactly what I thought. What in the world? So I had to learn this language that sounds just like... And had to learn what that meant so that I could speak to these people that were in this camp. And it was along the way that, and learning in this, I realized that I was not a specialist in what I was doing. I was talking like a two-year-old. I could not be understood. So in France, I will always be a foreigner because I have this little accent that I carry. And I always will, because I learned language when I was 20. And so I have this little accent that I always carry. So everybody will know that I'm not from France. But when I come back here, I'm a specialist on France. Everybody asks me, what is it like in France? So a little later, we're going to ask some questions. And you can ask any question you want about France, or even where France is or what France is. But in France, I've learned a few things. I'm not a specialist, but I have learned a few things, especially about the church. And I want to kind of to tell you a little bit about what we've seen over the last 46 years in France. I want to tell you that right now, the evangelical church, so a church like this that you go to, that's the fastest growing church in the country of France. Because they're evangelizing and they're starting home churches. It's estimated that there's a home church started every 10 days in France now, which was not the case 46 years ago. When I went there 46 years ago, don't go to Google and to get your percentages, by the way. Don't go to Google to figure out how many Christians there are in France, because it'll tell you everything from 5.5% to 15%. So I dropped that. This is what I saw. So when I first started going there, one half of 1% of the people were believers. And now they estimate that about 3% are believers. So what does that mean? I break that down. So in 1950, you could take a poll and you could ask people, what do you believe? What do you believe? What's your religion? What do you believe? In 1950, you could do that. And there were 50,000 believers in the country of France, evangelical believers at that point in time, 1950. Since 1950, it's illegal to ask people what they believe on any kind of a government census. You cannot do it. So even the evangelicals, we have a hard time figuring out how many Christians are in France, but they had a big assembly and they had a few what they call them, sondages, they've done a few polls to try to figure out where people are at. Well, it's estimated now that there's between 750,000 and maybe a million believers in the country of France. So what are we about, what, 40, 50 people here? Maybe somewhere around 45. Let's say we're 45 people. So could I have three people stand up? Any three. The kids would be great. The kids would be great. When I first got there, okay, that's four kids now. That's too many. One of you can sit down. Okay, oh, the girl sits down. She's very kind. So there's three boys standing up right here. So when I first got to France, out of all the people in the country of France, there were just this many people that were believers. And now, if we look at the percentages, everybody in this room today would be a believer. So that's kind of the percentage, if you're looking at it, to try to put some, you can sit down, guys, thanks, to give an idea of how many people. So that's a lot of expansion over the last, you know, 45 years, 46 years that I've been, oh, excuse me, since 1950, so it's a little more than that. So we can really feel that. And in the country of France, we've gotten together, the evangelical churches, they've got together to form an association. 70% of the evangelical churches are in one association now that has a very, very strong say. They can go before the government officials, and they have this, they call it a council, the Council of Evangelicals. They go before the government, and they have a very nice voice with the government. And so they're beginning to be heard, and they're beginning to be seen as something not as just this weird thing that's off here to the side where only three people stand up, but it's where 45 or 50 people stand up. And so there's a bit of a powerful voice that we can bring to that these days. And that's when we go up against things like euthanasia, meaning do you have the right to put somebody to death if they're at the end of their life, if they're too sick? Or if we're talking about saving life of an unborn child. So that's the things we go before the government and talk about. And the churches in France, if you become a Christian in France, the first thing they do is to get you baptized. But they put you through a class, so you learn, I'm going to go be baptized. Anybody been in here been baptized? Sure you have. How about the young kids? Have the little ones been baptized yet? Or the teens, any teens, that age group? How about the older ones? Sure, we've got lots of hands out there. We've been baptized. So, but they'll go through a class to be baptized. And they know what they're getting into. It's just not, you're saved this morning, you're baptized tonight. They go through an entire class to know what they just did, what it means to follow Jesus. And then they're discipled. And so that's, I think, the key to what's happening in the Church of France right now is that they're very keen on discipling right away. You don't wait. You don't just expect it to happen in church. You get people and you disciple them right away. So you get one-on-one, or in small groups, and you get them to begin to disciple. I think that's why the church is growing in France today. And all across France, we can look at these. This is what's happening here. And our camp is in a situation that's kind of neat because we don't see people from just our area. We see people from all across France. So if you know what Texas is like, if you've ever been to Texas, seen Texas, France is about the size of Texas. And so we see people from all across. If you're in Texas, it'd be like seeing people from all over Texas come to our camp. And we can look across the country, and I can point out pastors, I can point out Bible school teachers, I can point out missionaries, that their pathway, their journey to Christ and with Christ has passed through the camp. And so, because we've been there for now, just working with the fourth generation. So our fourth generation are these youngest ones, you know, that we see in the room. And so I've known people, I've known their grandfathers, their fathers, known them, and then I know their children. And so that's kind of to give you an idea. It's a bit like this church sometimes. You have four generations in a church, or five even. And so it's really a blessing to be able to do that and to see how many people, their pathways have come through the church, to the point that there are some testimonies that we heard. Several pastors have come up to me and said, we thank you for the camp, this little place in the middle of the Alps. We thank you for that because every single one of the youth in our church came to faith, put their faith in Jesus Christ at your camp. There's something about getting away and certainly getting to a place where God decided, I'm going to go meet people there, and then that changes your perspective on the church and your family and everything. You can hear about belief all your life, but kind of get pulling away and getting away and letting God talk to you, that's what's happening at the camp. And so that the young people have come to faith in Christ, now they're back out working in the churches. And it's really a neat testimony to see. I could go on about many of these testimonies. There's some bigger church leaders and some missionary people and some discipleship leaders in France. But I want to talk to you about one kid that's a little closer to your age. Paul Emile. So how many of you are 7 years old in this room? We have any 7-year-olds? We got a 7-year-old back here. How many of you are 6? Or even 5? How old are you? You're 5. How old are you, young man? You're 6. So this is Paul Emile on the right, and this is his brother, Philemon. These are weird names. Paul Emile and Philemon. So these are two brothers, Paul Emile and Philemon. I don't really know, you know, what that is in English, but I don't think we have that. Paul Emile started coming when he was about 6 or 7 years old. And his family started bringing them to camp because they wanted a little something extra beyond church. And French get a lot of vacation, and so they get to go places with their family. And so he got to come to our camp, and that's our camp kind of behind there, some of our buildings. And what we do there is we go out in the woods, we get a hiking stick, and we carve it a little bit, and then we go on hikes. So that's part of what we do. So Paul Emile has been with us for a long time. He came with his family, and his family was just very appreciative of what we were pouring into him. So he came to our family camps, and he started coming to our youth camps. And then when he was 17, just before he came a counselor, we baptized him in the fountain right there at camp. Now, this kid is probably 6'4" now, and he's a big guy for a French kid. So he carries a lot of charisma with him, I think, just because of his height. But he's a very good kid at heart. And so he came to our camp. He got baptized at 17. And now he's working as a counselor. And he's there on the right-hand side. And he's now working as a counselor. This first year was our last year as a counselor. So he came to camp. He got saved. He got baptized there. We don't baptize people regularly there, but his whole family was there, and everybody's in agreement. But on the right-hand side, then he became a counselor. He was so happy to be a counselor because he's waited all his life from 6 years old until now, he's 19 here, to be a counselor. And he was just so humble about it. And he said, I've watched these guys. This is the camp staff that works there now. He said, I've watched these guys all my life. And he said, and I just thought, how much have they given to me? I want to give something back to them. And so in this photo, everybody that's in that photo, except for the little, of course, littlest kids, because they were there all the time, worked at camp for 2, 3, 4, 6, 10, sometimes all their life, in the case of my daughter here on the upper left, who was born and raised there, before they came on staff. So they had the same testimony as Paul and me. The camp changed my life, and I want to go back and be a part of that. And so my daughter is up on the upper left corner, married a Frenchman who's up on the right. I know his grandfather, his father, and I know him. And I can just make this announcement, can't I? The little one that's growing inside of my daughter's stomach is the fourth generation. So it's an amazing story to me that God comes to camp and he touches lives generation after generation after generation. And I'll say all that. Why? Because all that goes to your credit. All the lives that were changed at camp, God said, I'm going to go here and meet people. I just went. I was sent by you folks and other people. I was just the guy that got to go there and be there and keep the building up and keep the programs going and just to meet those people. But you are the ones back here praying and giving so that me and this team right here can do the exact same thing. And God comes in and meets people and changes life. All the credit. I don't know what it's going to look like in heaven. It'll be interesting to see. Is he going to line us all up and say, hey, I want to show you this kid in Nepal here that was saved because you sent somebody over there or because you prayed, or here in Bulgaria or all these are in France, and say, because you sent these people and because you prayed, these people were saved and they're here in the kingdom, and then introduce us to those people. Heaven's going to be a very neat place. I don't know how it's going to work out, but all that goes to your credit, anybody that was saved at camp. And so it's been a blessing for us to be there and just to watch that happen. And Paul Emile now is back serving the camp, and he wants to make, he's actually talking about becoming full-time. Flo, okay, my son-in-law, the dark-haired one with the cap in the back next to me, his name, I don't know why the French people call their names, give names that you can't pronounce. So Florent is his name, Florent. And if I asked Gail to say that, he probably wouldn't be able to do that, but Florent. So we call him Flo. He knows Flo's a girl's name, but everybody calls him, he assumes that he's. So we call him Flo, and he calls himself Flo. So this is Flo. What was I going to say about Flo? I got lost in my thoughts. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's been a blessing for him. What was I going to say about Flo? I got caught up in the name. That's right. That because he watched Flo grow up there at camp. And Flo is his counselor for Paul Emile. And so Paul Emile wants to come because he admires Flo. Like, Flo is just like his discipler. It's Paul to him. And so he, in the Bible. And so it's really neat to watch that happen. And that's, we're just basically training other people to train other people to train other people. And God's working there. So if you've been around me very long, you know that I love this verse. And I'll explain it to you kids what it means. It says, it's Psalms 37:3. It says, trust in the Lord and do good. So you know what it means to trust. You trust your parents for things. You know what it means to do good. I know you know what it means to do good. And because you know when you're not doing good. And It says, trust the Lord, do good, dwell in the land, and cultivate faithfulness. What does dwell mean? Dwell means just be there. Be in the land where you're at, live there, and cultivate faithfulness, faithfulness to Jesus. And dwelling just means you can't dwell somewhere, you can't be faithful somewhere where you're not. So God has put you here for now. And I just want to ask you that question. How are you doing on the Great Commission? In other words, God, Jesus told us, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Tell people about Jesus. In your part of the world, you're here. How's it going? Are you able to do that? Are you able to share in the shoes that he's given you, the shoes of good you're wearing, the gospel of peace, as you carry the gospel of peace around? How's that working out for you? People say, ask me questions sometimes, and I'll open up for questions here. I'm not sure what time it is. Open up for questions. He asked me all the time, well, how did you get your calling to go to France? I said, well, probably about the same way you got your calling to stay put. Did you get your calling to stay put? If you're here, I have to believe that you were called to be here. And it's not just a default setting. I just didn't leave, and so that's why I'm here. So I have to believe your calling is like my calling, that God has placed you here for a purpose and a meaning and a reason. And if he wants you to go somewhere else, he will make that very clear to you. How are you doing with your calling, with your dwelling, here where you're at? Are you spending your life with purpose and meaning? Now, to say that to young people, that's to young children, they maybe don't quite understand that yet. But I will tell you, kids, do something significant. You have one life to live. And so spend it well. You have one life to spend. Spend it doing something with purpose and meaning, something that is significant. And Jesus says the best thing that we can do is to tell others about him. And we don't have to do that all the time with a loud voice. We just have to be faithful. We have to trust in the Lord and do good. Just be good kids. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. I thank you for your service here to us. You've prayed for us. You've taken care of us. We've become family. I like to talk to you as family, even if I forget your name, Gail. It didn't last very long. You knew the hard drive would pull it back up eventually, didn't you? But you've been family to us, and we really appreciate that. There's nothing that can replace that. And I think God looks on that, and he says, I'm going to bless these people because they've blessed missionaries all over the world. And it was really neat to see all you young children here this morning because that means the church is growing and the next generation is being trained so that you can grow up and you can train, that you can grow up and you can train. So it's really a blessing to watch this. Now, I'll open this up just for a few questions. So if I'm looking at this, what's the dot you gave? I have till 9:45, perfect. That's about a little bit more than 15 minutes. If it goes quits early, wouldn't that be fun to get out of church a little bit early? I don't know. But there are some questions out there. I'll be willing to answer any of your questions about anything that I've said or maybe a little more precision on that. But I just want to open it up and just, what do you want to know about France? Oh, wait, I got one more. Excuse me. One more. This is the last one. It's a pitch. It's a sales pitch. You always got to make a sales pitch. So many years ago, at least three kids and a husband ago, Amanda came to camp, and she was there, and she helped us. She helped us with one of our youth camps. It was an English camp, and we still do these camps like that. But all year long, we have more than 100 volunteers coming through from the United States of America. We also have French volunteers as well. But 100 come over there, and we think, you know, the French could probably do it for us, but it's really, there's something about leaving your country and going and being invested somewhere else that really changes your heart for missions. And so we continue to put out the call for helpers to come from North America to come and help us at camp. We could use you all year round, and it doesn't matter your age. We can use the big ones, the little ones, all the way through. We do kids camps that start at 5, and we do all the way through till 97, I think, is our oldest camper that we had. And so we have opportunities for you to come either on a service team, or you can come and you can help in the program. We have building projects. We're redoing all of our old buildings. These buildings are 250, 300 years old, so we're remodeling them yet again. It's probably about the 6th, 7th time, not for us, but over the course of their lifetimes. So we could always use anybody, really. I don't know what you do, and it doesn't matter. We say, it doesn't matter what you do. Come, and we'll figure it out. I may not know, you know, what I can give you right away, but if you'll show up, we'll give you something to do. And we have certain times all year long. All you have to do, you can take a picture of that. Sorry, I don't have a QR code. That's the coolest thing, but this is the next coolest thing. So you can get is go to this internet site, and you can just say, hey, Tom said this, and so is there a possibility for me or my family or us to serve? And we'll figure out something for you to do. But a mission trip will change your life. If you've ever gone on one, you know what I'm talking about. It'll change your life to go to a different country. So it's just that condeseem.com. Of course, if I say that, you're going to miss a couple of S's and a P. So Camp DeSimus, yeah. Condeseem. You just tap that in, and we'll get a hold of this. Are there any questions about what we said or about our this morning? It's just a share time. Thank you.
Wait. As a converted Catholic, how do you deal with the stronghold of Catholicism in France? It seems like it's the discipleship that would be key, because the Catholics will say the same words but totally mean something different. Maybe you've seen a culture change from the stronghold of the older generation Catholics. See the growth?
Absolutely. So it's about the question about France is traditionally, like most of Europe, a Catholic nation. What we're doing right now is what's been had a lot of success is the Alpha courses. And so the Catholic Church is having a hard time getting priests. So the priest that we deal with in our little town, he covers a huge area, like a 100-mile circle, that he has to go to all these little churches and do mass every now and then. I don't know what his system is. But Alpha courses are courses that they're Bible studies that were started with and for the Catholic population originally. And so you just go in, and what it is you sit down together with a group of believers, and you open the Bible. And instead of talking about what you think it believes, you're talking about what the Bible says right there. You read the Bible, and then you have a discussion about that. Sometimes the priest is present, sometimes the priest isn't present, which is a new paradigm. It used to be, if there wasn't a priest there, and we've had even some people say that, well, how can we talk about the Bible? There's not a priest here with us. We say, well, we're not really making any decisions. We're reading and just seeing what's in here right now. And if it comes to an interpretation of things, we say, well, there's different kinds of interpretations on that. We can dig a little deeper on those things. And so instead of being blocked by our differences, and all of our camp staff are in Bible studies. Well, the ones that speak, there's a couple of them that don't quite speak enough French yet, are in Bible studies with Catholics right there in that little town where we're at. And and the priest actually has turned it over to our coworker Dan, to kind of like lead those things, because Dan actually has probably a little more knowledge in some things than the priest does at this point. And I think it's working with them that's really made a difference. For many years, I worked with a converted Catholic priest who was in his 90s, and he found the pottery thing, and he really wanted me to show that to his Catholic people. And so every chance he got, I couldn't be any kind of a formal mass or that, but he would have me go around with the potter's wheel, and we would talk. And he would lean to me sometimes. He was converted. He would lean to me and he goes, it's almost evangelical, isn't it, Tom? You know? And the last Catholic review, they sent out a Catholic review. I counted on the first few pages 9 times they talk about evangelism. That is a difference. That's a paradigm change for the Catholics, is to evangelize. It's really been kind of neat to watch it happen. So the Catholics are being converted, staying in the Catholic Church, and slowly just kind of helping the people with these studies turn that corner. So it's encouraging. It's very encouraging. Yes. Yes, we do. These are camps where they're kind of a little more hands-off. Summertime we kind of organize everything in the program. Winter camps, the families come, and they get up the next day, and they go to the ski slopes. We give them a picnic. They go to the ski slopes all day long. They come back at 5 o'clock, and they have a time where there's teaching, and so the kids go into their program. The adults sit and listen to one of these speakers. Maybe he grew up at camp or not. That has become a pastor, and then they have their time. And then we have supper and an evening event. That's usually a fun event that we have. So it's very laid back because it gets dark early there. And so, well, like it does here. So at 5 o'clock, we're in message times and skiing's done. And so that's what it looks like. And so the thing about if you come helping us, that's what I'm hoping I'm hearing, is that you want to come help us during a winter camp. The service team during those camps, they take their picnic after and they do their cleaning. They take their picnic with the campers and get it ready to go. Campers would take off. The service team finishes cleaning, then they can go ski as well or go snowshoe or just go walk around play in the snow all day long until 5 o'clock. They come back, and then everybody gets into message times, and we talk to them. That's a little bit different. I love family camps because they're much more laid back and a little more time where you can just, because it gets dark early, there's a lot more time just to sit around and discuss things and talk. So, oh, we don't get too much snow. I mean, it dumps on us a couple times a year nowadays. It used to be we'd get good snow all year long, but we lose the sun for about a month and a half, so any snow that we get usually stays at camp for the full season in the winter. They're skiing on a glacier up top, and they ski in the summertime up there because there is a glacier. So the two major ski resorts in France are just right next to us, within 20 minutes each of them. And so that's why the camp is such a well-placed. We have lots of people on vacation. If you want me to discourage a little bit, France gets a lot of vacation. So in the late 1940s, they decided, okay, everybody gets 3 weeks vacation. What that's turned into is now everybody gets sometimes 3 months vacation. Every 6 weeks, everybody gets 2 weeks vacation. So 6 weeks, then you get 2 weeks off. And they kind of take them in zones. Can you imagine that? They take it in zones. So zone A gets their first week off. They're all by themselves on the ski slopes. But then zone B starts on the second week of zone A. You know, and so there's more people. And then zone B is done. Zone C starts with the second week of zone B. So that means that every time they have vacation, we have like 3 to 4 weeks of camps. And so it's a neat thing. A lot of vacation. And I think that's another reason why this camp works so well is because there's so much vacation. And if French have a God, it is vacation. You try to take that away from them, and boy, they're just like. The thing about it, folks, is if you don't get enough money, make enough money to go on vacation during these times, the French will give you money to go on vacation. They will supplement so that you can go on vacation. So don't move there in masses because it's not as great as you might think. But there's other things that cause us problems with. But they get a lot of vacation. They get paid to go on vacation. So they come, and that's why our camps are full. We don't do a lot of publicity. We have this internet site, and that's about it. We don't do a lot of physical publicity. And our camps are always full of people. Any other questions? Way in the back. It's socialist. It's a socialist government. Socialist? That's a socialist government. Yeah. And I think if you're looking at it, they do a lot of things that they take the better parts of that socialism and use them. They don't push them too far, like could be pushed. But, I mean, there's always that potential. There's always that potential. But yeah, they're trying to figure out how to deal with it because, I mean, if you're paying people to go on vacation, there's a lot of loopholes in the system. They're running out of people to pay for that. They pay, yeah. And it's free. It's just free money, yeah. Well, if you're working, you're paying 27% at least of your money goes to taxes. So that's how they're helping pay for a lot of it. 27% comes right off the top. Boom. And that's how they're getting paid for. Yes, sir, in the back.
How big is the camp, size-wise?
We have probably we have 5 buildings, and there's probably 100 beds, 100 because we're remodeling. We're kind of taking down the number of beds. It's too big. So in a French setting, we've kind of find that sweet spot is the maximum you want to have is 90 kids, or 90 people. Period. Because then you go over that limit. French are real big on. Being able to, churches are the same. If their churches get too big, they decide we probably need to divide this church because we can't really have a relationship with more than maybe 100 people, 150. So French are built that way. And so for us, that 90 is a sweet spot for the size of, we can't really expand because we're on the side of a building or side of a mountain, I mean, and the buildings, you know, you can't really do that. We've already made one, we made a big major building back in the early 80s. But that's about all the expanding we can do. 90 is a good camp because everybody gets to know everybody. They feel like a family. We keep that. Most of ours run around between 60 and 80. But we have the capacity for 110 beds. So we can throw our service team in some of those beds and stuff like that when you all come. So, right here. Yes, excuse me. There's community outreach in where we're at. I mean, we do that. We don't do it like, say, a lot of publicity, but we're involved with the people in our community. But most of the people that come to camp have some sort of a either close or a loose connection with the church. A lot of my friends that are believers, they'll work. They're with their friends. They grew up with their friends. They became Christians, but their friends weren't Christians. And so their families are growing up, and their kids are getting older. And they said, I've told them all I can tell them. We're always together, but I said, we've told them that they don't want to hear any more about gospel, so I'm going to bring them to camp. He said, can we bring them to camp? I said, absolutely, you can bring them to camp. So they bring them to camp, and so then they'll get connected like that. And usually it's the kids of those families that say, we want to come back here. And so the parents are kind of obligated to do that. And the friends are very faithful to their vacation spots, and so that's very helpful as well. So, yeah, but most of them, we get non-believers in, but they're usually invited by other people. And a Frenchman on vacation is another blessing that God uses there. A Frenchman on vacation is very open to new ideas, new things. My neighbors that I work with every day, that I see every day, I have to be very, the evangelism is slower. Because I have to build relationship, they have to trust me, they have to see the gospel working before they ask those questions. Whereas if somebody comes into my camp, they know it's a Christian camp, I can go right up to them. Oh, you're new. Are you a believer? You know, how did you get connected? What do you think about that? What do you think about this faith thing? You know, and so they're easy to talk to. Where I can't do that with my neighbors, that would be too much in your face, and that would be just. Because a Frenchman on vacation, he can tell me anything, and then he can go home. He's not going to see me, you know. So that's a real blessing at the camp. Yes, in the back. Yes. Yep. Yep. So Paul Emile's family. Well, he's one of them that does the winter camps, but we'll see him for. He'll come help us with kids camp. They'll come with the family camp. Then. He'll come to the English camp with his brothers and his sisters. They all came, and then they'll help come and help the little kids camp. So you see them several times throughout the year. And we have families that have come a couple times a year for the last, I think, Perros, they're 20 years they've been doing summer and winter every single year, and then sending their kids to youth camp as they different ages. So, yeah, we see them often. And to the point that we had to add more camps because all the regulars were filling their camps. You know, they would be online, and before they left, they would, you know, say, "Sign me up for next year." So we had to put a date now. We say, "Sign up, start on this date," and they're waiting. They're waiting by their computer, you know, and it opens. They get on there. So we've added some camps so that would kind of take off the pressure there. People ask me this question hasn't been asked, but about Muslims. A lot of Muslims. Muslims don't evangelize. They just have big families. That's their evangelism strategy. We do see a lot of Muslims coming into France. We don't see many Muslims at our camp unless a youth asks one of a Muslim-believing friend to come to camp. So we get a few of them. But the Muslims don't go on vacation. Like if they have the same vacation time, but they always go. Their vacations are go to the motherland. So they go to North Africa and those countries that are Muslim. That's what they do. So we don't see a lot of them in the mountains. They don't hike like we see some Jewish families because the ski resorts are owned by, you know, some of the Jewish families. So we do see them out and around. But so we're talking Muslim. We're out. Hour away, we have some missionaries with our mission that are working with the Muslims there because there's a big influx of the Muslim population, but we don't see it. And I will say that, you know, most Muslims are just like most Christians in America. You know, they're not radicals. They're not crazies. They just want to live their life and live their culture. They're easy to talk to because you don't have to convince them that God exists. So you have a base already with you're talking to a Muslim. You're not trying to convince them that between evolution and God, like a Frenchman, you usually have to start there if they have no background in religion at all. Most of my friends are Catholic atheists. Catholic because they're not Muslim and they were born in France, and atheist by belief. So it's real interesting. Any other quick questions? Yes. They are, but unfortunately, they're taught by French people. And so they talk English like a French person. Yeah, they're understanding now. Okay, maybe we need to get some English speakers to teach our English so that our kids can be a little more fluent. They all have a great base. They're probably better in grammar than I am, but they can't spit it out because that's the one part that they're missing is the practical end of speaking. I saw one other quick hand. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, but we're the cheapest place in town. It's only going to cost you $13 a day for room and board to come in, and it's going to cost you a big plane ticket. But once you're there, we're cheap. Because that is the minimum amount that we have to pay volunteers. So France is getting, so they don't want you to do volunteers. If I get a volunteer in, I have to pay for their Social Security. I have to pay all the money. So it would cost me more to pay for their Social Security than they would pay for the camp. So what we do is we charge our volunteers, and it's 12 euros a day for our French people as well. And so that would come up to about $14, I think, in right now. And so we're really cheap. For room and board, you can't stay anywhere in the Alps and eat, especially if you're eating her food. Thanks for praying for us. If you have a prayer for Chris, I could leave for the camp. We need a full-time cook. So we're back and right, given the responsibility. We don't plan to go anywhere, but we're giving responsibility to this team that's here. The biggest hole is when she's backing away from the kitchen. She's been at this for 30 years, and she knows the ins and outs. And when she backs away, this team panics. It's like, and so she's trying to train and back away a little bit, and so she'll leave the biggest hole. You can replace her director anytime, but it's hard to replace a cook. I'm going to go ahead and step down. I think we're out of time here, let me just close in prayer really quick. Father, if I could just ask your special blessing on this body of believers here in this town, Father, Hot Springs. Thank you for your glory that shines in this church through each one of these individuals. Thank you for their faithfulness. Thank you for their faithfulness to train up their children, to train up others. Thank you for their faithfulness to us and for missions all around the world. I know that they're faithful mission supporters. I just pray your extra special blessings, Father, on this church for wisdom for the future, for transition, for all the things they're going through. I pray your grace and your mercy on them, and just your love would be poured out to them as they love one another. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Thanks for the time.